DW Africa Link.
In the wake of the recent tragedy in Benue State, where the echoes of grief and gunfire still linger, President Bola Ahmed Tinubu has stepped forward with the promise of economic transformation. His visit to the region just days after a brutal attack that claimed the lives of dozens carries a message of hope and a pledge to rebuild. However, in a state that has endured years of violence and neglect, the question that looms large is this: can promises of development truly take root in a place where security remains so fragile? This is the pressing issue we'll be delving into. Stay tuned. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
A renewed wave of violence in Nigeria's Middle Belt left at least 150 people dead in Benue State, prompting President Bola Tinubu to crack down on the perpetrators. But beyond the tragic loss of lives, this violence threatens Nigeria's ability to feed itself. Central Nigeria, particularly Benue State, is the country's agricultural capital. As farmers flee their lands and rural insecurity deepens, the impact is likely to worsen, leading to rising food prices, inflation, and hunger. This podcast aims to bring listeners into the heart of what has become a protracted conflict over the years. More than 6,000 people were forced to flee their homes as a result of the attack. Analysts blame Nigeria's worsening security crisis on a lack of political will to go after criminals and ensure justice for victims. However, Tinubu said in quotes, "We can turn this tragedy into economic prosperity." Now joining me for this discussion is Rildwan Bello, co-founder CEO of Vestance Limited. Vestance is an advisory and consulting firm that offers data-driven intelligence and expert advisory services to help businesses and governments unlock Africa's agri-food venture potential and reshape the agricultural landscape. Also joining the discussion is DW's Abiodun Jamiu in Abuja. I'll start with you, Abiodun, just to give us an overview of what exactly happened for the benefit of our listeners who might not know about these killings in Benue State.
Okay, Jose, what we are currently witnessing in Benue is a wave of sustained and escalated violence that has torn large part of the state, particularly by extension, Middle Belt, into what many residents has called war zone. The most horrifying of this attacks took place in Yerwata community, where more than 100 people were killed in a single night. Our survivor told us that the attackers attacked in the middle of the night, burned down houses and which has led to mass displacement of residents in those areas, including farmers. So, but what this is that it is not an isolated incident. In the past few weeks alone, at least four other communities have come under similar attacks. Despite the chief of army staff, moving to Benue State to actually curtail the extent of this violence. So, and what also makes it quite very alarming is that Benue State is often termed as the food basket of the nation. And what this means is that the mass displacement means locals and farmers are driven away from their community, and which inadvertently will affect Nigeria food production.
And now to you, Rildwan, as our guest today, and just to also look at what is happening in Nigeria and with the main focus on Benue State. From an agricultural standpoint, how critical is this state and obviously by extension central Nigeria to the country's food supply?
It's a very, very critical zone. The Middle Belt is central to the food security in the country. Benue State slogan is the food basket of the nation. So a sustained attack on the farming, and that means you can as well guess that the community are mostly farming communities. So a sustained attack on such communities definitely attack the heart of food system in the country. And when you have that, you have the food insecurity grows further. So this is significant when it comes to the food insecurity in Nigeria. We are coming off the back of a very high food inflation rate, right, which is temporarily relieving, subsiding due to the tariff and trade policy relaxation, right? But then you can't import your way out of such situation, right? So any attack on that system obviously plays a key role in the food insecurity and affects everybody at the end of the day. Just a few weeks before the attack, there was the bridge that collapsed in Niger, right? There was the flooding, which affected thousands and millions of produce, right? That was supposed to come to the southern side of the country, right? So you can see how things like this is central to the food insecurity that Nigeria is currently battling with.
Right. As our correspondent here told us already that this renewed violence in the state obviously meant that residents who are predominantly farmers were killed, and also a lot of people displaced from their communities. Just to also find out from you, Rildwan, what policies are in place to help mitigate the impact of insecurity on food production, as you both really say that Benue State is actually the food basket of the country?
Well, there have been several reconciliatory efforts, right? There have been several panel reports on the cause of the crisis, you know. This crisis is not something that started yesterday. I think the Benue Middle Belt, the Middle Belt, Benue, Jos, and all of those Kaduna crises is something that many of us grew up to start learning. So when you are thinking about it, it's not just about, oh, maybe a policy today that needs to address that. It's about, okay, going to the root of this matter, avoiding sensationalizing the stories so that we can actually get to the root of the matter. Unfortunately, the decoloration that the crisis always come with, because now it has come like this, when exactly is there going to be effective justice, right? It's not sufficient that the government set up a panel and some people just get away with this act. You know, the panel says, let's do this, let's do this. We must be make sure that, okay, the perpetrator of this act, until we get to that point where it's obviously clear that, okay, the perpetrator of such acts cannot get away. Now, these guys that committed the last atrocity, they've probably gotten away with it, which means in another couple of months or after, there will be a reprisal attack because the community also knows the people that attacked them, right? They could tell about the identity, but if government set up multiple panels and they did not see those people that attacked them being punished, you can also imagine that there will be a reprisal attack. And so we go through this merry-go-round year in, year out, right? Which is actually a big challenge in that regard. And the crisis is not just about the farmer too, right? It's not just either farmer crisis alone. It's also resource crisis, right? It's also about land crisis. There's so much layer to it. Right. There's also militia problem within the state as well. There's the castle rustling, which is also a serious crime. Right. So at the end of the day, there still needs to be conversation on the table, but we must show intent that, OK, you can't take laws to your hand. You can't commit mass murder and get away with it, no matter how wrong you've been. Right. So this is something that the government needs to signal to everyone. And so if anybody is trying to do reprisal attack, they will not be justified to do that.
And we'll come back to all those as well, Rildwan, to find out what exactly would you advise the government to do and also even just the citizens. But just to also find out from you, Abiodun, as you've been doing reports on this particular incident, what the farmers and residents are telling you about this violence, how it has really disrupted their lives and livelihoods.
What this attack makes for farmers and residents is that it has not only disrupted their livelihoods and lives, it has also displaced them or put them from their homes to areas that they are currently staying, which is the IDP. Some of them are currently in Makurdi, in displaced camp in Makurdi, where they have nothing sort of to write to. So the impact on ordinary farmers, just like they've told us, it's just sort of catastrophic. You know, people have not only lost one, the rainy season, which was supposed to be the peak of agricultural activities in this area, has now become a season of mass displacement. So for many of them, they cannot return to their farms, they cannot return to those areas they are currently staying in displacement camp. And what this means is that they cannot go to their farm. And those even farmers that have already started planting cannot also go back to their farm to check the status of their crops. So it is what others have just stored, others who have stored their foods in silos or have also everything were burnt down, Josie. Everything was burnt. So it's for many of them, the hope now is that things will improve, but there's not really been anything, any sort of improvement. And many are actually scared to go back. So for them, the psychological effect, the economic impact, it's actually very, very huge.
Wow, wow. And now just also the old one from what Abiodun just mentioned here, hearing that all the silos have been bent down, we're talking about food insecurity here. What policies are in place to help mitigate the impact of insecurity on food production now that this has happened in Nigeria?
Yeah, I think right now is when we are supposed to start talking about our forest guard. Right, because they are supposed to be one of the defense mechanisms to forestall attack like this. Right, the military is overstretched across the country, and so these are something that needed to exist. Right, you can't just place the military in the forest. There's a provision for forest guard. And this is not just about Nigeria alone. There's also like the whole Sahel region. The growing threat of insecurity from the Sahel region, which means that if Nigeria does not show intentionality in guarding its border, you continue to have like influx of attacks like this around the farming communities, right? So that is something that needs to be in place, needs to be properly supported so that these communities can also, they have a buffer zone before these guys are able to reach them. That's one. Also, secondly, there's the issue of state security. In the Southwest, this is something that in the Southwest, it's something that they've been able to manage to find a work around it. And I also understand that it's also a very it's a serious conversation, which is some part of the discussion for the national conference. That is being proposed, right? What you have in the security apparatus in the country is abnormal, right? You don't have enough policing, right? And so what should be a police activity is now militarized. And so in terms of internal security is now at that very weak point, which I think we need to go back to it. And so what has the Southwest done? There's a Amotekun security outfit, which is like state-owned security unit that works in conjunction with the federal government, right? It's a way of protecting and providing national support to defend and protect the farmland from the marauding invaders, right? So, and I think given the location of some of these states, especially how porous our border is, we also need to revive this forest guard and empower them to be able to do their jobs right, so that the border properly secured, and also they could forestall any attack before it reaches a lot of these communities. Also mentioned that tonight the Middle Belt region, similar to what we have in the Southwest, using the Amotekun reference, and the Joint Task Force JTF in the Northeast region, I think it's high time that they also come up with such initiative, right, to defend, like provide extra support internally without relying on the federal government all the time. I believe that this is more than needed at this point, because if you don't have this system where you are the one managing and controlling this security outfit of vigilantes, you risk becoming another threat on your own, because how do you manage these people not abusing the power, not abusing the resources they have, if you people have to start defending themselves, you know?
Wow, this is just, it's just so unbelievable and sad to hear that this is what is happening in Nigeria. But before I turn to Abiodun, Jildwan, just to find out also if you think this, I really want an honest, straight answer, because as I was listening to you and I'm just wondering, how will people survive? Do you think the country's food system has the resilience to absorb the sustained attacks on farming communities over the years?
The answer is not as straightforward as you wanted me to answer. I can't say yes. I can't say yes, right? Because having seen what Nigerians have gone through over the past couple of years, it's also difficult to say no. And what do I mean by that? We've had incredible level of food inflation that you would ask yourself, are people surviving? And we still have the country standing like this. No major protest, no major, everybody just like live with it, right? So that is something that kind of gives a false confidence when we are thinking about the food system, right? There's also, of course, right now there's the importation that is going on across the major staples. So right now, in the immediate, the impact may not be felt, right? Because this is being mitigated by import level, and it's federal government that is importing the majority of the food, right? So it's easy for federal government to like still supply to the market. However, this is not something that can be sustained for long. And that is where it becomes, the whole thing becomes apparent to the public that, okay, we have a big problem on our hand, right? So that for me, and when you're also thinking about the global landscape, we can see the news from the Iran, Israel, the Strait of Hormuz, and all of this, which means shipments and logistics, it also becomes even tighter over time. So you actually need this, you need to address this insecurity, because the less farmer you have, the less food you produce internally, and the less food secure you are, right? So that is. So while immediately we may not see the impact in prices of food today, we will see the impact in another 12, 18 months, because what you have in stock and the old production. Like now, Abiodun mentioned something. These are farmers that are supposed, this is John. Everybody should have completed planting by now and applying fertilizers and do all of that. But these are people that now they have to live in the IDP camp. And this Benue State is a key production hub for certain produce that are very central to our food security. Soybean, 90% of soybean production in Nigeria it's everything, animal feed. So it impacts the price we pay for egg in Nigeria. It impacts the price we pay for chicken, right? It impacts the price you pay for vegetable oil. And this is the main production hub of this particular commodity.
So have you already seen changes in terms of pricing, even as you are in maybe Abuja, Lagos already after this attack?
No. There's not going to be a change in that, because the people that, the major manufacturers or the traders, they probably have their warehouse before now stocked up, right? You're not going to see that impact immediately.
Okay.
Because now also is the end of season, right, for commodity traders. So you have break between now and September. And so it's October when people expect these productions to start coming to the market that they are not even, when they are not getting it, that's when the market start responding to that. Before we can see the impact of this now, it will be like September when you expect that, okay, we typically get maybe 100,000 metric tons of soybean from Benue State, but we are barely getting 50,000.
Right.
And so that eventually causes massive volatility in the price of this commodity.
Right. Now, just to wrap up our discussion, Abiodun, how have authorities responded to these attacks so far? And if there are any measures that have been put in place to prevent attacks of this nature from happening in the future?
The action on the ground is still lagging behind the urgency of the situation.
Mm.
You know, people want immediate solutions to this thing to be able to go back to their normal lives. But what we are seeing on ground is a far cry from that. So at the state level, the state government has also, you know, deployed the community volunteer guards, you know, local vigilantes into rural areas to forests to root out some of these perpetrators. But just like I've said, it is still a far cry from what is actually from what the people need to actually go back to their normal lives.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Rildwan, as we also wrap up with you, your firm actually offers data-driven intelligence and expert advisory services to even governments. And just also, I mean, as I don't know, advice or what you think the steps the government should take to actually assist even the displaced farmers and revive food production in affected areas, as well as even the private sector, not just government. I mean, now I think now it's high time government and the private sector work together in trying to improve the situation and also curb insecurity.
I think one major thing that the government needs to do right now is to see to returning these people to their homes, right? Trust me, farmers, no matter what happened, they still just want to go back to their farm. And so they need to have that sense of safety. It's not just enough that they visit them, give speeches, and go back to, like, and I mean, talking about the administrator, go back to their normal life. They need to actually see that, okay, we are here with you, and we are here to support you, right? So you can't abandon them in IDP camps, hoping that they will figure out their life and live on your handouts, right? So in this case, you are looking at, okay, can we at least, do we have a proper register of all the affected farms, all the affected people, right? Mm-hmm. Their belongings and all of that. And we bring in palliative instruments, right, to support them to return back to their home. Mass low cost construction for them to be able to go back to their lands, and security support, impute support, because this is what they've always known, right? They don't want to live. I've not met farmers that wants to, that is comfortable to live in IDP camps, right? They always want to go back to their home, even no matter how terrible the situation is. So what the government needs to do is meet them at this point of need, right? And it's something they have to do urgently. It's not sufficient that you give them one bag of seedling, one bag of fertilizer. That is not sufficient, right? Government needs to bring in serious investments into those communities in terms of providing them a playing ground to start their life, afresh. Beyond that, there's also the need to provide mental health support for them, right? Oftentimes, people don't think about this and how it affects them. We just look at them and think that, oh, they just go back to place, you know.
Yeah.
It's also affects their mental health.
Rildwan Bello, co-founder, CEO of Estance Limited, and DW Abiodun Jamiu in Abuja, many thanks for joining us. At the Africa Link podcast, we always cast our gaze across the continent to see how the stories we cover play out or sometimes even intersect. Ayo Sotirin, the newly appointed CEO of Nigeria's Bank of Agriculture, has outlined a bold reform agenda that could be a game changer for the country's agricultural sector. His plan, which includes digitizing operations, reducing non-performing loans, and expanding access to credit for rural and youth farmers, has the potential to transform the landscape. With a focus on recapitalizing the bank, strengthening agricultural value chains, and launching a nationwide loan recovery drive, Sotirin aims to revive the bank's role in boosting food security and rural development. I had the opportunity to catch up with him at the AFDB annual meetings, and here is what he had to say. Ayo Sotirin, CEO of Nigeria's Bank of Agriculture. That is a wrap for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a vital part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Remember, you can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify and Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for tuning in. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.